Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Hello and welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week we are continuing to read Blood Games, and last week we read. "We have a brief moment of opportunity," I said, fishing through the man's wallet I had stolen earlier. His name was Gary Walker, and I found his access card right next to his driver's license. I pulled it out and held it up. Gary agreed to lay low while I made use of this. She gave me a look that made me shrug. I didn't kill him. And now, episode 25. The rest of the drive passed slowly, with Chris making several more attempts to talk me out of my plan. "You don't have to come," I said on the third try. "It's better if you don't." I wished I would have thought to look through Gary's wallet when I'd searched him and the woman back in the alley. If I'd have known about his key card, I would have gagged the two of them and made sure they wouldn't be found for hours. It was too little too late now, but I had an opportunity I could not afford to pass up. If we hurried and made it to the Data Raider headquarters before they were found. "You can't do this alone, and I'm all the help you have right now," Chris said. "Unless you think Shannon is going to help." There was something strange in her voice when she mentioned Shannon, but I couldn't figure out what it was. Her words rubbed me raw, so it took me several seconds to calm down before responding. She didn't know Shannon was the last person I wanted to think about right now. It wasn't her fault. "I can handle this, myself," I said, through clenched teeth. "That's part of the problem. You're out of control," she said. "How many people died at Reed's place? Or was all that blood from men who walked away?" She took my silence as an affirmation that her guess was close to the mark. "You need to stop before you do something you won't be able to live with. I know you, Jake. This isn't you." I thought of how I'd almost killed Gary Walker back at the alley. I had been prepared to do it. It was because the woman had caved that he still had his life. Chris's words were having more of an effect on me than I would have liked. She must have taken my lack of response as evidence she was getting through to me because she continued talking. "All the people you killed, they deserved it, right? That's what you're telling yourself. Are you certain they're part of Reed's supposed criminal enterprise? How do you know they weren't just his security guards?" "You've seen the videos." I began, but she cut me off. "And they prove nothing. The only thing I can say is that they look a lot like you." She shook her head. "And a fine fool I'll be if I learn you are behind them." "I saw the kids with Reed," I said. "Yeah, but I didn't," she said. "If you expect me to follow you into the Data Raider headquarters with nothing more than your words, that's a lot to ask." "I already said you don't need to come. I prefer you don't." She pulled over, lurching to the side of the street. "Get out of my car," she said. "I want nothing more to do with this madness." "That's for the best," I said, grabbing the door handle. Growling, she put the car into gear and pulled back into traffic with the door halfway opened. I smiled without mirth as I pulled it shut. "You're impossible," she said. "You know that." "No," I thought, "I'm just a man with one purpose." I'd known she had been bluffing, but I was a little surprised that after everything I'd said, she was still insistent on coming with me. It nagged at me like popcorn stuck in my teeth. Why did she want to come when she had every reason not to? She wasn't telling me something, but I couldn't guess what it was. At first I thought it might be she had proof Reed had the kids, but as I mentally replayed our conversation, I remembered she still didn't believe me about Reed. As long as her secret didn't interfere with me getting to the kids, I didn't care. She didn't argue further, and we rode in silence. It was more than a little odd that she'd been by my side the last time I'd made an insane bid to infiltrate a large corporation. We had had better cover that time and a better idea of what we were up against. If she had been in a better mood, I might have joked around about it, but she wasn't in a place to hear it, so I kept my mouth shut. This time we had access cards, And even though I had told Chris I didn't need her, it would be nice to have her along because the woman's card, Jen Brown, appeared to have higher levels of access than Gary Walker's. Jen and Chris had similar hair color, even if their face structures were different. In a pinch, Chris might be able to bluff her way past security. I, on the other hand, looked nothing like Gary. If we were put into a tricky situation where our identities were called into question, Chris was in a better place to handle it than me. We drove the rest of the way in silence. Getting into the parking garage was much easier than I had anticipated. Perhaps my guess had been correct. The fact Reed was behind these attacks meant he had not bothered to raise the level of security. Or maybe he's planning to do something and wants to minimize the body count. Chris swiped Jen's card and we were in. The guard at the gate looked bored as he waved us through, barely looking up as he did. I'd had a hand on my pistol, something Chris noticed as we pulled down the ramp. "You need to wipe that murderous look from your face." She shook her head and muttered, "This is suicide. This is how I die." She said something else I couldn't hear, but I didn't ask her to repeat it because I assumed it had been about me. I put the pistol in my bag. She was right. I was wound tight enough that the smallest thing would set me off. Without realizing what I was doing, I rubbed my sore knuckles. They were no longer bleeding, but the skin was rough. It was a good reminder I needed to maintain better control of myself. If I went in hot-headed, all sorts of terrible things could happen. I thought of a time when I'd had less worry and fewer cares, back when I'd been at Blackbrick, ironically. As we pulled into a parking spot, I imagined I was out for a run alongside a beach, my feet pounding against the wet sand as the waves licked at my shoes. A sense of calmness set in, but it didn't last. I pushed it away. While I intended to make rational decisions wherever possible, that wasn't how I was going to accomplish things today. I needed to give in to my instincts, to let my darker side run things. My utter lack of hesitation back at the alley had disarmed Jen Brown. It was a tool I needed today. I couldn't afford to neutralize it. Jen had believed I'd been about to kill Gary because I had made the decision to do it. Once she had realized that, things had gotten easy. That was the Jake Ramsey who was needed, the man who would do whatever he needed to free the children. I opened the door and got out almost before she was done parking. "That's good advice," I lied, putting a smooth, emotionless look on my face. "I'm ready to do this." Without looking back to see if she was coming, I headed for the elevator. And that's it for this week on the Jake Ramsey episode. But also, just like last week, we are going to have an excerpt of the next chapter. We're going to have the next chapter from Monkey House. 9. Jimmy was on his feet first. I was the moment after. Fuzzball headed towards the third floor with Jimmy on his heels as I shook my axe warningly at Petey. "Don't move," I said. You were never invited inside." He hissed from where he rested by the window. The big monkey outside the other did the same, making it sound as if the wind were blowing. Becker growled to reinforce my words, and I had never been so glad for canine companionship. I could see Petey's eyes glimmer as he spoke. "You better go after them." While I had a mind to do that very thing, it seemed an unwise thing to do while Petey stared at me, waiting to pounce at the earliest opportunity. I almost did when there was a crash and a thud from above. Those were followed by a scream that cut into my heart. Petey smiled, apparently expecting that I was going to chase after, but I remained where I was, staring down the two brutish monkeys with as much confidence as I could muster. It was bad enough that I'd have a few broken windows and a destroyed grandfather clock to explain when my wife got home. I didn't need any more damage. I racked my brain, trying to think of what could have broken, but nothing came to mind. My wife preferred decorations made from wood. Petey's smile only grew larger while the other stared at me with dull eyes. I couldn't decide if they were less intelligent or if Jimmy was above average. The silence had long since turned awkward by the time Jimmy returned, holding Fuzzball by the scruff of his neck and pushing him forward. "My apologies," Jimmy said, with a nod back to the stairs. "I should have warned you that Eugene has a tendency to avoid conflict." I nodded, wanting very badly to ask what had broken, but also not wanting to betray any emotion. The situation was still recoverable. Everything that had happened so far could be explained as a robbery attempt. It would be much harder if the house were torn up by the beast outside. "Let go," Fuzzball said, trying to twist free. "It hurts." Fuzzball shrunk away the moment Jimmy released his hold.
That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions, LLC.